We got back into the car and got back on the road, headed east for I-95. I told Summer to go slow. If she didn't, then the way she was likely to drive on empty roads at night would get us to the diner well before my sergeant, and I didn't want that to happen. My sergeant would get there around 6:30. I wanted to get there after her, maybe 6:40. I wanted to check she hadn't done her duty and dropped a dime on me and set up an ambush. It was unlikely, but not impossible. I wanted to be able to drive by and check. I didn't want to be already in a booth drinking coffee when Willard showed up.
"Why do you want all that stuff?"
Summer asked. "I know what happened to Mrs. Kramer," I said.
"How?"
"I figured it out," I said, "like I should have at the beginning. But I didn't think. I didn't have enough imagination."
"It's not enough to imagine things."
"It is," I said. "Sometimes that's what it's all about. Sometimes that's all an investigator's got. You have to imagine what people must have done, the way they must have thought and acted. You have to think yourself into being them."
"Being who?"
"Vassil and Coomer," I said. "We know who they are. We know what they're like. Therefore, we can predict what they did."
"What did they do?"
"They got an early start and flew all day from Frankfurt on New Year's Eve. They wore Class A's, trying to get an upgrade. Maybe they succeeded, with American Airlines out of Germany. Maybe they didn't. Either way, they couldn't have counted on it. They must have been prepared to spend 8 hours in coach."
"So?"
"Would guys like Vassil and Coomer be happy to wait in the dullest taxi line, or take a shuttle bus to the city, all cramped and uncomfortable?"
"No," Summer said. "They wouldn't do either thing."
"Exactly," I said. "They wouldn't do either thing. They're way too important for that. They wouldn't dream of it. Not in a million years. Guys like that, they need to be met by a car and a driver."
"Who?"
"Marshall," I said. "That's who. He's their blue-eyed gopher. He was already over here, at their service. He must have picked them up at the airport. Maybe Kramer, too. Did Kramer take the Hertz bus to the rental lot?" "I don't think so. I think Marshall drove him there. Then he drove Vassil and Coomer to the Jefferson Hotel."
"And?"
"And he stayed there with them, Summer. I think he had a room booked. Maybe they wanted him on the spot to drive them to National the next morning. He was going with them, after all. He was going to Irwin, too. Or maybe they just wanted to talk to him urgently. Just the three of them, Vassil, Coomer, and Marshall. Maybe it was easier to talk without Kramer there. And Marshall had a lot of stuff to talk about. They started his temporary detached duty in November. You told me that yourself. November was when the wall started coming down. November was when the danger signals started coming in. So they sent him over here in November to get his ear close to the ground in the Pentagon. That's my guess. But whatever, Marshall stayed the night with Vassil and Coomer at the Jefferson Hotel. I'm sure of it."
"Okay, so?"
"Marshall was at the hotel, and his car was in valet parking. And you know what? I checked our bill from Paris. They charged an arm and a leg for everything, especially the phone calls, but not all the phone calls. The room-to-room calls we made didn't show up at all. You called me at 6 about dinner, then I called you at midnight because I was lonely. Those calls didn't show up anywhere on the bill. Hit 3 for another room and it's free. Dial 9 for a line, and it triggers a computer. There were no calls on Vassil and Coomer's bill, and therefore we thought they had made no calls. But they had made calls, it's obvious. They made internal calls, room to room. Vassil took the message from 12 Corps in Germany, and then he called Coomer's room to discuss what the hell to do about the situation. And then one or the other of them picked up the phone and called Marshall's room. They called their blue-eyed gopher and told him to run downstairs and jump in his car."
"Marshall did it?"
I nodded. "They sent him out into the night to clean up their mess."
"Can we prove it?"
"We can make a start," I said. "I'll bet you 3 things. First, we'll call the Jefferson Hotel and we'll find a booking in Marshall's name for New Year's Eve. Second, Marshall's file will tell us he once lived in Sperryville, Virginia. And third, his file will tell us he's tall and heavy and right-handed." She went quiet. Her eyelids started moving.
Is it enough?
She said.
Is Ms. Kramer enough of a result to get us off the hook?
There's more to come, I said. It was like being in a parallel universe, watching Summer driving slow. We drifted down the highway with the world going half speed outside our windows. The big Chevy engine was loafing along a little above idle. The tires were quiet. We passed all our familiar landmarks, the state police facility, the spot where Kramer's briefcase had been found, the rest area, the spur to the small highway. We crawled off at the Cloverleaf, and I scanned the gas station and the Greasy Spoon and the lounge parking and the motel. The whole place was full of yellow light and fog and black shadow, but I could see well enough. There was no sign of a setup. Summer turned into the lot and drove a long, slow circuit. There were 3 18-wheelers parked like beached whales and a couple of old sedans that were probably abandoned. They had the look. They had dull paint and soft tires, and they were low on their springs. There was an old Ford pickup truck with a baby seat strapped to the bench. I guess that was my sergeant's. There was nothing else. 6:40 in the morning, and the world was dark and still and quiet. We put the car out of sight behind the lounge bar and walked across the lot to the diner. Its windows were misted by the cooking steam. There was hot white light inside. It looked like a Hopper painting. My sergeant was alone at a booth in back. We walked in and sat down beside her. She hauled a grocery bag up off the floor. It was full of stuff.
First things first, she said.
She put her hand in the bag and came out with a bullet. She stood it upright on the table in front of me. It was a standard 9mm Parabellum. Standard NATO load. Full metal jacket. For a sidearm or a submachine gun. The shiny brass casing had something scratched on it. I picked it up. Looked at it. There was a word engraved there. It was rough and uneven. It had been done fast and by hand. It said, Reacher. A bullet with my name on it, I said.
From Delta, my sergeant said. Hand delivered, yesterday.
Who by?
The young one with the beard.
Charming, I said. Remind me to kick his ass.
Don't joke about it. They're awful stirred up.
They're looking at the wrong guy.
Can you prove that?
I paused. Knowing and proving were two different things. I dropped the bullet into my pocket and put my hands on the table. Maybe I can, I said.
You know who killed Carbone, too?
Summer said. One thing at a time, I said.
Here's your money, my sergeant said. It's all I could get.
She went into her bag again and put $47 on the table. Thanks, I said. Call it I owe you 50. $3 interest.
52, she said. Don't forget the babysitter.
What else you got? She came out with a concertina of printer paper. It was the kind with faint blue rulings and holes in the sides. There were lines and lines of numbers on it.
The phone records, she said.
Then she gave me a sheet of Army memo paper with a 202 number on it.
The Jefferson Hotel, she said.
Then she gave me a roll of curled fax paper.
Major Marshall's personal file, she said.
She followed that with an Army phone book. It was thick and green and had numbers in it for all our posts and installations worldwide. Then she gave me more curled fax paper. It was Detective Clark's street canvas results from New Year's Eve up in Green Valley.
Friends in California told me you wanted it, she said.
Great, I said. Thanks. Thanks for everything. She nodded.
You better believe I'm better than a day guy. And someone better be prepared to say so when they start with the force reduction.
I'll tell them, I said.
Don't, she said. Won't help a bit coming from you. You'll either be dead or in prison.
You brought all this stuff, I said. You haven't given up on me yet. She said nothing. Where did Vassal and Coomer park their car, I asked.
On the 4th, she said. Nobody knows for sure. The first night patrol saw a staff car backed in all by itself at the far end of the lot, but you can't take that to the bank. He didn't get a plate number, so it's not a positive ID. And the second night patrol can't remember it at all. Therefore, it's one guy's report against another.
What exactly did the first guy see?
He called it a staff car.
Was it a black Grand Marquis?
It was a black something, she said. But all staff cars are black or green. Nothing unique about a black car.
But it was out of the way. She nodded.
On its own, far end of the lot. But the second guy can't confirm it.
Where was Major Marshall on the second and the third?
Oh, that was easier, she said. Two travel warrants. To Frankfurt on the second, back here on the third.
And overnight in Germany? She nodded again.
There and back.
We sat quiet. The counterman came over with a pad and pencil. I looked at the menu and the $47 on the table and ordered less than $2 worth of coffee and eggs. Summer took the hint and ordered juice and biscuits. That was about as cheap as we could get, consistent with staying vertical.
Am I done here? My sergeant asked.
I nodded. Thanks. I mean it. Summer slid out to let her get up. Kiss your baby for me, I said. My sergeant just stood there, all bone and sinew, hard as woodpecker lips, staring straight at me. My mom just died, I said. One day your son will remember mornings like these. She nodded once and walked to the door. A minute later, we saw her in her pickup truck, a small figure all alone at the wheel. She drove off into the dawn mist. A rope of exhaust followed behind her and then drifted away. I shoveled all the paper into a logical pile and started with Marshall's personal file. The quality of the fax transmission wasn't great, but it was legible. There was the usual mass of information. On the first page, I found out that Marshall had been born in September of 1958. Therefore, he was 31 years old. He had no wife and no children. No ex-wives, either. He was wedded to the military, I guessed. He was listed at 6'4 and 220 pounds. The Army needed to know that to keep their quartermaster percentiles up to speed. He was listed as right-handed. The Army needed to know that because bolt-action sniper rifles are made for right-handers. Left-handed soldiers don't usually get assigned as snipers. Pigeonholing starts on day one in the military. I turn the page. Marshall had been born in Sperryville, Virginia, and had gone all the way through kindergarten and grade school and high school there. I smiled. Summer looked at me, questions in her eyes. I separated the pages and slid them across to her, and stretched over and used my finger to point out the relevant lines. Then I slid her the memo paper with the Jefferson Hotel number on it. "Go find a phone," I said. She found one just inside the door, on the wall, near the register. I saw her put two quarters in, and dial, and talk, and wait. I saw her give her name and rank and unit. I saw her listen. I saw her talk some more. I saw her wait some more, and listen some more. She put more quarters in. It was a long call. I guess she was getting transferred all over the place. Then I saw her say thank you. I saw her hang up. I saw her come back to me, looking grim and satisfied.
"He had a room," she said. "In fact, he made the booking himself the day before. Three rooms for him and Vassal and Coomer. And there was valet parking charge."
"Did you speak to the valet station?" She nodded.
"It was a black Mercury. In just after lunch, out again at 20 to 1 in the morning, back in again at 3:20 in the morning, out again finally after breakfast on New Year's Day."
I riffed through the pile of paper and found the facts from Detective Clark in Green Valley, the results of his house-to-house canvas. There was a fair amount of vehicle activity listed. It had been New Year's Eve, and lots of people were heading to and from parties. There had been what someone thought was a taxi on Mrs. Kramer's Road just before 2 o'clock in the morning. "A staff car could be mistaken for a taxi," I said. "You know, a plain black sedan, clean condition but a little tired, a lot of miles on it. The same shape as a Crown Victoria."
Plausible,
Summer said. Likely, I said.